Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, you want that to go?
Oh, yeah, some takeouts now on stories we want you to stay on top of. And, of course, in Washington, it's not news when a major piece of legislation is held hostage by broader ideological debates in the House and Senate. And the health care bill is no unusual example of that. Abortion was one of the significant amendments that preceded the passage of the health care reform bill in the House on Saturday. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, joins us. So good morning, Todd. And there seems to be some sharp division over whether this amendment on abortion is some little detail or a sweeping change for women that would have impacts far and wide.
Well, remember back when Bill Clinton said it depends on what the definition of is is?
How can we forget?
And in this case, it's getting to be what the definition of status quo is. The president has said this bill should not change the status quo when it comes to abortion. He repeated that yesterday in an interview with ABC News.
And current law says that federal funds, Medicare, Medicaid, can't really go to abortion, right?
Current law already says that. Yeah. And the proponents of this abortion bill that passed, the one that you mentioned, said, well, this just codifies current law. No federal funds used for abortion. But the opponents, the pro-choice caucus, and there are a lot of them, are up in arms already saying it goes beyond that, because you not only have the public plan, but you also have the exchange, and the exchange has lots of private plans on it.
Let me just, because the argument here, and you know, shut me down if I'm wrong, the argument here is if a company, say Aetna Life Insurance, Aetna Insurance or somebody, you know, Acme Insurance, takes any federal money at all from a subsidy for insurance, and then it will decide on its own, basically, we can't do abortions because we'll be in trouble. It amounts to a kind of chilling effect. So I got it right.
You got it right, because those private plans on the exchange, most of the women on those plans will be getting some form of subsidy. So the plans are just going to say, why are we going to cover abortion at all? Actually, we can't, because we'll run afoul of this amendment. So the pro-choice folks say this goes way beyond the status quo. This is not just codifying that no federal funds language. So what's your definition of status quo? The president came out in an interview yesterday and said this shouldn't change the status quo. Well, thanks, Mr. President. We already knew that, but he went a little bit further, and he said more work needs to be done so that this bill doesn't change the status quo. He seems to be indicating that he's agreeing with his pro-choice people on this. The undercurrent of this, John, is that the progressives in Congress, the liberals, really the pro-choice people, they're not all one and the same, but pretty much they are. They feel like they've really bent and bent and bent on this health care bill. They didn't get a strong public option. The bill's not as big as they want it to be. They had to roll over on abortion. Well, they're tired of it.
So they're fed up. Well, let's do the numbers. It only passed by 5 votes. How many votes say they will vote against this if it has the abortion amendment in it?
Diana DeGette is the leader of the pro-choice caucus. She put out a letter yesterday saying she has 41 members on paper who say they vote no unless this is taken out in the final bill. So this is a problem. This is a powder keg now.
There's your takeout. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Thanks, Todd.
Let's go to business now with Daniel Gross, senior editor at Newsweek magazine. Louise Story is out sick today, so we have Daniel. Welcome back to the show, Daniel.
Oh, good to be here.
So the Federal Reserve announced yesterday the result of their so-called stress tests on banks, and the results were that one of the nation's 10 largest banks, all but one, I should say, of the nation's 10 largest banks, have enough capital to weather a recession, a deeper recession, should we go into one, right?
Yeah. They had the banks do these stress tests earlier in the year, when they all passed, and then they all went out as things were stabilizing and raised a lot of new capital to provide cushions. The one exception of those large institutions is GMAC. That was the former financing arm of General Motors, which really, you know, isn't a bank or wasn't traditionally a bank that took deposits. So that's the one that's still suffering.
But Dan, does this mean that things are going well and the industry is recovering, or does it mean that these banks took federal funds, taxpayer dollars, and instead of lending it to people, have just socked it away for a rainy day?
Well, I think from the outset, when that TARP started a year ago, this notion that we were giving the money to banks so they could lend like it was 2006 and 2007 again was misguided. We were giving them capital so that they wouldn't fail, putting capital in to kind of shore up their finances, and it had that effect. It allowed them to go out and raise new money, and importantly, since interest rates are so low, this is a great time to be a bank. If you borrow money at 0%, I would venture that you and I might be able to figure out how to make money lending. And so they are recapitalizing themselves by raising money from outside, but also from, you know, racking up pretty decent profits. And I think that's sort of, you know, what was intended, and it's happening, but it's not necessarily translating into huge flows of new capital to companies and people.
Okay, Dan Gross is a senior editor at Newsweek magazine.
All right, and listeners, of course, give us takeouts all the time. As details emerge about the background of the suspect in the Fort Hood shooting, the question of Nidal Malik Hassan's religion is still controversial to some listeners.
I think that the shooter's religion is relevant only in the context that the ridicule he'd gone through since 9/11 is part of what may have broken him and contributed, and I think that should be covered just as much as everything else concerning him.
That's a listener named Nancy in Sterling Heights, Michigan. A listener named John emails this. It's a no-brainer, he writes. If a person's religion is relevant to the story, you include it. If it's not, you don't.
While investigators continue to probe Hassan's past and his religion, Lawrence in Atlanta is doubtful. He writes us, what if he had a Bible in his pocket along with his ammunition? Would you make references to the religious right with so much regularity? Face it, you and the other media have bought into our fears and ignorance and sensationalizing a sad event that was brought on by religious persecution and mental imbalance.
And as far as mental imbalance is concerned, there's persecution associated with that.
My name's Andrew in Oklahoma, and I just wanted to say that even in the civilian life, there is a huge stigma against people who have sought treatment for any kind of mental illness, for example, depression. It really makes getting employed, even as a civilian, very hard.
Well, keep all the stories coming at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org.